This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's On Air McDonald.
Well, and I'm off following the long weekend, so I'm here. I'm Ramya Amadhin with Danielle McLaughlin, and she's helping co-host for 3 days in a row and then taking Friday off where we're doing some solo shows. If you're following us during the summer, this is the way we swap it out. And we have some interesting things that have come up between, you know, yesterday's 2 to 4 p.m. edition of Kelly and Company and now kicking off this show. So Danielle, we're going to get to some of that, but I also wanted to let people know that today you have provided us with a vanity card, which is the little bit of audio we like to tack on to our full show podcast right at the end. And you have some mysterious things that you're working on in your garden. So we'll leave it at that to give people a tease on why they should listen till the end of the podcast. But shall we get to what's coming up on today's show? Margaret Weldon, she's joining us a bunch on today's show. And on In the Know, she has tips on how we can save energy while making our homes more comfortable year-round.
The Regina Folk Festival will be piloting an accessibility project using a hearing loop. Jim Crisco has the details.
Also, the International Association of Assistance Dog Partners is announcing a new website. It's very timely, and we're going to get the details with Devin Wilkins in the second hour during our Guide Dog and Service Animal Report. So, some news items to get to, Danielle, and of course, we're going to appreciate your commentary and perspectives on some of these. One is a little closer to home for us here in Toronto. The woman who is famously known as the Napalm Girl from a 50-year-old photograph taken during the Vietnam War recently finished her last laser treatment to help heal her skin from the injury she sustained that day. Kim Foot Van Thie, who now lives in Ajax, Ontario, became well known after a photographer took a photo of her 9-year-old self running naked and screaming down the road, surrounded by other children after napalm burned off her clothes.
I turned my head, I saw the airplane, and then I saw 4 bombs landing like that so fast, and I heard the noise. Boop, 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 boop. And then suddenly the fire was everywhere around me.
A few days after her laser treatment, Kim Foot Van Thie was in Warsaw, Poland, helping welcome a group of Ukrainians fleeing their war onto a flight that would resettle them in Regina. So, Danielle, your first thoughts on this?
Well, I just think she's an amazing woman. I recently heard her interviewed in which she talked about how ashamed she felt when that now world famous photograph of her as a 9-year-old fleeing the war shortly after all of her clothes had been burned off. And for anyone who's seen that photograph, it is unforgettable, but that she really couldn't look at it for such a long time because she just felt such shame. And now she realizes how important that photograph is to tell people the horrors of war and how it affects children. She has done a lot of outreach to refugees. She has been really the voice of peace in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I have to say that I really admire her. And you know, she came to Canada with, you know, in very poor physical shape. She just had to have yet another surgery because of all of the burns on her body. And yet she just manages to keep on rolling and works for other people. She's really become a significant representative of the peace movement. And for that, I think she deserves all the honors she gets.
Mm-hmm. And one thing you pointed out, which is that realization of her own healing, but as well to help other people by being able to revisit, talk about, and I would say even relive that photo, the moments, the descriptions, as you heard her speak about that moment and when it was happening to her at the age of 9, then, you know, like, we know and we hear about, I would say, the kinds of trauma that people have to deal with going through war. And that's really anybody who has had any impact of war at all, firsthand impact. And we know that that's a lifelong journey, and very personal, very intimate.
Exactly.
And people go through. Yeah. And you can go through it, you know, willingly. But I think a lot of people go through years of denial and not wanting to talk about it and not wanting to deal and all that. But to go from that point as a kid to this point where she is now and the kind of help that she's offering. And I think really, like, at night when she's on her own, she still goes through the challenges, right? I think anybody would of every day making the decision to publicly speak on your experience. Yes, it makes her stronger, but it's still so much of a challenge.
I think so too. And you know, the thing is, when we hear a statistic like, you know, thousands of children have been harmed, we don't really have an image in our minds of what that means. But when you hear one individual talking about her own personal experience and how it's affected the rest of her life, it really comes home. And, you know, some people will never talk about it because the trauma was so massive and that's what's right for them, and they shouldn't have to in any way be forced to. But when somebody chooses to do that, they really are making a contribution to the greater understanding of the horrors of war. I totally respect that. You know, I had a friend who lost his mother after she was quite old when she died. Only at her funeral did we learn that she had been a Holocaust survivor, because she never wanted to talk about it. She never mentioned it. He had heard that she was, but never knew anything about it. And people who had known her when she was younger spoke at her funeral. And so many people were surprised to learn the details of what her life had been. So, you know, I think it's important that we know so that we can hear from the people themselves.
Yeah. And also believe that we may never know, like you said about the Holocaust survivor, right? We may never know and never truly find out what people have lived through. And I think of people who've come from all kinds of situations and horrors into countries like America and Canada and live lives now. And, you know, we talk about just surface level dealing with technology, dealing with changes, but you never really get to understand the traumas and places they've been through and gone through before coming here. I think of my own parents and other people and their parents and all kinds of things that we can never come to terms to because we have no clue.
That's
how much
right.
Been through. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break and come back. Margaret Weldon. Thank you, Danielle. Margaret Weldon is going to join us for the latest health headlines. She's filling in for Jeff Ryman this week and Bill Shackleton. So we'll be right back with her. This is Kelly and Company, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on weekdays is when you can join us. And we have so many great things that we talk about. And you know what? We'd love it if you join the conversations. 1-866-509-4545 is how you can reach us via the phone. You can leave us a voicemail, actually. And if you want us to play your message on air, please give us permission to do that. We got a message from Robert just giving us some technology updates, so we might get a chance to play that later on in the show or sometime this week. Also, feedback@ami.ca is our email address to give us any of your written commentary and feedback and suggestions. And then if you're scrolling through Twitter on social media, you can always find us there as well. @AMI Audio is our handle. And if you want to shout out and reach out to Kelly and Company specifically, it's #KellyCo. Haven't said that one in a while, but it's easy to find us on there with hashtag KellyGo. And it's really fun. Kelly McDonald is taking the week off, and I'm Ramya Amuddin. Hosting the show with me is Danielle McLaughlin. Usually we get into health at this time, and oh, we are going to get into health. So Danielle, you can take it away.
I'm so pleased to be able to do that. And normally we have our good friend Jeff Ryman, but today we have our wonderful friend Margaret Weldon. Hello, Margaret. How are you?
I'm good, and I love that pause. We have our wonderful friend.
I couldn't say better friend, could I? I had to say just yeah.
I know.
It's so nice to hear you, Margaret.
good to talk with you.
And I want to know, what are you bringing us today for health news?
Well, I'm bringing you, I hope, some innovative things today. And today we're going to start with a website. Actually, it's a program. It's called the Transplant Ambassador Program for people with kidney diseases. And what it is, it started out about 12 years ago when a lady called Susan McKenzie, who is from Ontario, had a kidney disease. And she realized, and she learned that not only was she going to have to get a transplant, but she was also going to have to find what they call a living donor. Now, a living donor is somebody that's...
I think we may have lost Margaret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really interested to hear about living donors. I know someone who is a living kidney donor and found out that when her husband desperately needed a kidney, that in fact she was the right match for him, which is an unusual circumstance. Oh. So he went on to live many more years because his wife was able to donate a kidney to him. But that's a rare occurrence when it's somebody who isn't actually,
you know,
related,
right,
by blood. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm curious about the access of information. You know, we hear about people having to wait so long for organ matches and going through huge struggles, you know, at the hospital, but also family members, and how much of a toll it takes on you and your loved ones. So this kind of thing that Margaret's going to tell us about, which is an app that helps kidney donors and recipients find each other, must be feeling very exciting for a lot of people out there.
Yes, especially the people who are waiting and waiting. I know that back before cell phones, people who were waiting for organ donations would have buzzers on them. You know, they would be
pagers?
Yeah, basically pagers. And I remember somebody saying there are only two kinds of people who have pagers, those waiting for an organ transplant and drug dealers. And so you had to be, if you happened to have a pager on you and somebody stopped you, you'd have to explain, well, no, actually, I'm waiting for a kidney. But
right.
Yeah. If only more people would sign their donation cards, you know, for their driver's licenses, I think it would make it a lot easier for those who are waiting.
We don't know, but maybe we can go through this article that Margaret did bring for us for health about this app. If you're down with that, because it sounds really interesting. She was starting to tell us about Mackenzie, who is the executive director, I believe, Transplant Ambassador. And it's interesting because, Danielle, for a lot of these initiatives, organizations that are built or services that are captured and brought into, you know, bigger picture scenarios, it's because of things that people have gone through themselves, right? So,
yeah.
You go through something and then you're like, how can I make this better? Or, you know, even after the fact, you're like, hey, there's so many other people going through what I've gone through. And then voila, comes this service that could be helpful.
Well, it's remarkable because, you know, as when we were talking before about Kim, people who've gone through terrible things sometimes realize that their experience can be used to help other people. And I think that's such a wonderful way of turning a terrible thing into a good thing. So, you know, for somebody to develop an app or to work with others to develop an app that can make sure people don't go through the rough yeah. time, you know. I sometimes think about Mayan Ziv, who you may be familiar oh, yes. with, who's created this
now.
Wonderful Access. Yeah, it's, you know, she's somebody else who has taken you know, difficulty and turned it into something that really blossomed. Do we yeah. have Margaret? Okay.
Yes, we have Margaret.
Okay. So we've great. Just yeah. been chatting away about people who've taken a difficult circumstance and turned it into something to help other people, Margaret. And you were going to tell us about the woman and this app.
Yes. Yeah, so anyways, that's right. So the lady's name was Susan McKenzie. And 12 years ago, she got very ill and was told two things. Number one, that she would need a kidney transplant. And number two, that she would have to find her own living donor. Now, for those of you who might not know what a living donor is, that is somebody who matches with your blood type, your system, all kinds of things, and is willing to donate a kidney. And even though Ms. McKenzie didn't know much about this, she took on this task because she had really wanted to live. And once she had the kidney transplant, it was successful, but didn't realize all of the emotions and the pains and all kinds of things that treatments and side effects could bring on. And she wanted to start a group or something that were people who were going through the same things, whether they be kidney recipients or donors, could share experiences without leaving the comforts of their home. So she, along with several other groups and individuals, started a program called the Transplant Ambassador Program. And this website began where you could share your hopes, get your questions answered, pictures, all kinds of things. And then as of last week, they launched a news segment on the program where they could go on this app to transplantambassadors.ca/patient-seeking-donors and find matches and between kidney recipients and donors themselves. So it would work something like a dating app, not app would work.
Mm-hmm. And, that's wonderful. Yeah. So how much information do people share, like blood type, tissue type, that sort of thing? Or is it just, you know, I have a kidney and I'm willing to part with it? Well, I mean, what sort of information do they provide, you know?
I think usually it depends upon how comfortable a person is. Like some people don't mind stating their you know, blood type and whatever on the actual website as well, you know, or they sometimes will wait till they actually get a possible match and then they might, you know, go into that further. So I think it just depends on the person themselves. But one of the other things that Ms. McKenzie pointed out too is that when you have kidney issues, you really don't feel well. And, you know, looking for donors is like the last thing you want to do. She said there were days when you could hardly get out of bed sometimes, right? So this kind of takes care of a lot of those issues. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
That's full marks for her. That's an amazing thing that she's done.
It's really great, too, that it was an expansion from the original idea, right? The original idea is pretty much a support group in virtual sense. And creating that kind of opportunity for people to support each other. And then from that, something clicked and you're like, you know what, you can make this expand even further, which is incredible. And it's very successful at the moment, sounds?
Well, it just started out last week, right? So that part of the program just got launched last week, like last Wednesday, as a matter of fact. So, you know, she feels that it's going to be successful, and it's actually going to help people all across Canada. So even though, you know, this whole thing started in Ontario, it's going to help people all across Canada. So that's just one move. And as you say, it's somebody that's taking something good. It's somebody taking something good out of something bad. Right. And putting, you know, and just making something positive happen. And so
wonderful.
Kudos to her and lots of luck to her. Now, I want to stay on the same topic a little bit and talk about a lady named Nicole Pompina, who has a brain disease called cerebral disc generis, which is the cortex of her brain was damaged at birth. And when she was born, she was not able to talk. Now, last year, she was suffering from some bleeding. So she was taken to Humber River Hospital here in Toronto, Ontario, where she had to undergo surgery. And she was told that her father was told that she was only going to have 24 hours to live. Well, She managed to go home from the hospital last Wednesday on a day pass after 340 days on a ventilator. Now, her father, who is blind, her mother died when Nicole was quite little due to cancer, but her father, who's blind, communicates with Nicole by putting his hand on the top of her head and nods it up and down for yes and moves it side to side for no. And this is how these two communicate. Yeah. And so that was quite remarkable. A lot of one of the registered social workers said it's very, very rare that somebody goes right home from the hospital. Usually they've got to go to, a convalescent or rehab hospital before they can go home. But in this case, Nicole had a private care nursing team. So they came in and worked with the hospital, as well as people from West Park, which is a rehab / convalescent hospital here in Toronto, to learn how to work with the ventilator because she still has it, plus, any other related equipment. So this is quite exciting for the hospital. So it's a lot of groundbreaking things happening within the last few weeks. So, everybody's kind of keeping their minds on that as well.
Wow. Well, that's really good to know that she can get that kind of support, and also that she and her father have a way of communicating with one another. Mm-hmm. It's a very positive story, isn't it, Margaret?
I think so. And, sometimes it's hard enough being a caregiver, right? But when you have a disability, it's difficult. It's almost next to impossible sometimes. So if these two have a good way of communicating, and it sounds to me like they've got both of them have some good support, I think it's very, very positive.
It's
you can look that one up on CTV Toronto News, and it's under the health section. Yeah. Now, finally today, I don't know about you, Ramya, and maybe you do too, Danielle. Do either one of you ride water slides?
I love water slides.
I'm chicken.
I don't like the feel.
She's the swimmer.
Yeah. Anyway, the Wild Works Park in Hamilton is run by Hamilton Conservation Area, and this is a park that has water slides, splash pads, all kinds of things. And one of the policies is there that they weigh everybody before they get on the water slides, because if you weigh 300 pounds, you cannot go on the body water slide. If you weigh 400 pounds and over, you cannot get on the tube water slide. But one of these stipulations that the park made was they were going to weigh everybody, whether they were overweight or not, so that, people don't feel left out. Well, one family went last week where a young teenager who has been suffering from anorexia got quite upset with this, because apparently one of the common things about anorexia is when they see their weight, if they feel their weight is too high, which it might not be, they want to make themselves throw up and just not eat at all. So and apparently medical experts say this is common. And that's what happened with this one young lady last week. She got upset because if she wanted to go on the slide, she was going to have to get weighed. And a spokesperson from the park said that they weigh everybody, just to make it fair. Now, Canada's Wonderland has such a system as well. But what they have a scale with different colors on it. So it's one color if you're overweight, another color, I guess, if you're underweight or the proper weight that you're supposed to be. So I guess if you're under a certain amount of weight, and I guess there might be one whether you're way too underweight, but I don't know for sure. Now, the Hamilton Conservation Area says that they are looking to install such a scale at the slide at this Wild Works Park. And
thank you, Margaret. I'm really sorry. I really like that idea of not actually showing you the numbers. Brilliant idea. We have to go right now. But you know what? We're coming right back with Margaret Weldon. So talk to you in a moment, Margaret.
That's right. We have In the Know after the break here on Kelly and Company. This is the show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Kelly and Company on a Wednesday afternoon. Hope you're having a good midweek. Oh, midweek though? I don't know. It doesn't really feel like midweek because, for so many reasons. One of them being we had a long weekend in Ontario came back, only a 4-day week for us. And then we've just had so much fun with all our technology this week. So time seems to be doing something strange. I don't know whether to say it's going faster, but something's happening. Anyway, so, but it, regardless of all that, it is hump day. It is Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. And we roll on through here on Kelly and Company till 4 p.m. I'm Rami Amuthan here with Danielle McLaughlin. And it's time for In the Know, the official segment with Margaret Weldon.
Life's continuing changes can lead to a lot of questions. Join me, Margaret Weldon, to get your answers. And then you too will be in the know.
Margaret, you joined us for health in place of Jeff Ryman. We talked through some interesting articles, but now you have some tips on how to save energy in our homes and be comfortable year-round, which means that one of the major tips is actually starting to think about winter proofing our homes. So it's the beginning of August and we're still in the summer season. Nobody really wants to start thinking about winter, but why is it important to do so and start thinking about winter proofing?
Well, the fact is, and yes, it is beginning of August, and I kind of asked myself the same thing. But the fact is, the reason we need to start thinking about what we call winterproofing now is because if your home is not properly proofed, you lose a lot of energy, you lose a lot of gas, which, you know, costs more money, right? And mm-hmm. how this happens is, you know, maybe a furnace is not up to date, maybe it's not working properly. Maybe you have an out-of-date water tank or boiler, whichever it is that you guys use, you know, for hot water or for heat or whatever. And the worst thing that nobody really ever thinks about, actually two of them, are insulation and even windows in door, like, you know, gaps in windows and doors. And what happens is the warm air gets out, but the cold air gets in. And then as a result, you have to turn up the heat, right? And which, you know, costs more money because you're using more gas or electricity or whatever you use for heat. Now, by the same token, it's the same way in the summer, except for you rely on your air conditioner in the summer, right? So right. you're letting, you know, the warm air is coming in, but the cold air is going out, and you're making your air conditioner work that much harder. It's almost like standing with the fridge door open, you know, in your kitchen. So even though it's really all weatherproofing, the technical term here is winterproofing. And the reason you want to think about it now is because in the winter, it's much harder to do these changes. You know, the last thing you want to do is sit in the cold or sit in the house with no heat. So now is the time. They're saying the best time to get on these kinds of things.
Yeah. And is it the same reason why we're thinking about it? Why it's going to be helpful all year round? Like all the different things you're talking about with the heat and the problems that arise if that's not done properly.
Yes.
Similar to thinking about the summer. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Except for, like I say, the air, instead of like in the summer, the warm air getting in and the cold air goes out, right? Because you rely on mm-hmm. your air conditioner, right? Mm-hmm. And even though the air conditioner is not really the furnace, it's still connected to your, or sorry, yeah, the furnace, it's still connected to your thermostat
right.
rather. So yeah. Right. So yeah, it's the same idea. So even though we call it winterproof, we're saying it's the same thing all year round.
You just don't want the outside coming in, whatever the temperature is, I guess.
No, that's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, what you're saying makes an awful lot of sense, but can be rather expensive. Are there any programs that can provide us with some kind of assistance for this sort of retrofit?
Yes, there are. And the first one, actually, I'm going to talk about a couple of them today. And the first one is basically for Ontario citizens. And it's put out by Enbridge Gas. And what this program does is it subsidizes things. So what you would do is you would apply for it. Now, actually, it's funny because last week they gave me the name of it and they just changed the name of the program this morning, but we'll get into that in a moment. But anyways, what they do is they fund things, like they fund insulation changes. They fund, you know, updated thermostats, all kinds of things. And the way it works is this: you have to schedule an assessment, an energy assessment. And if you would do that through the Enbridge Gas, so you must be an Enbridge Gas customer. I know that Ontario has a lot of different gas providers, so you must be an Enbridge Gas customer. You need to schedule an energy assessment. And what that means, somebody comes into your home
goes through it, looks at all the different things, you know, how efficient is your furnace? How's the boiler working? How old is your furnace? Is your furnace and your furnace stat? All kinds of things. And then they tell you what you need. And then once that's done, you can get either a grant program or a loan program. And the grant program basically helps you get the funding you need for the changes that you want to make. And they give you a certain amount of time to implement those changes. And then the advisor comes back to give you an upgrade on your home. And that's how that program works.
And what's the name of the Ontario program that's offering this? Or who's offering this?
The name of the Ontario program that we're talking about here is the Home Energy Efficiency Program. And that's what that one's called. And that's the one that's offered by Enbridge. So that's an Ontario or a provincial program. Now, for those of you who live in other provinces, you may have other programs, you know, like the one we just described.
Wow. So that's really impressive. What kinds of households are eligible? I guess not everybody's eligible for the program, right?
For the grant, no. They're actually if you make under a certain amount of money, I believe it's if you make like $30,000 or less, you can get the grants. If you make more, you might be able to get a partial grant, but then you'd also have to get a loan. So they would have to come in and see your financial situation. Now, there's also another program too, which is also called the Home Efficiency Loan Program for low-income families, and that's if you make under $20,000 or less, and there they will actually give you free insulation, free thermostats, and free water tanks, I believe. And that program, you know, you'd still have to have the energy advisor come in, but you don't have to worry about getting a grant or anything for that program. So the grants are for the lower income families, where the loans might be for the ones that have a higher income.
Mm-hmm. And how does the program work, Margaret, in terms of how you can find out if you're eligible, you know, get yourself on it, et cetera?
Okay. So again, you have to be an Enbridge customer. So you can go to Enbridge, which is spelled ENBRIDGE.com, and they will give you links. Or you can contact them directly at 1-877-362-7434, Mondays through Fridays between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern. They're closed Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays. And they will help connect you to the right person or department if you find that the website is not accessible. Also, I don't know whether how many people do this, but I also get my Enbridge bill online. Like, they tell me how much I owe online, and they also send information about upcoming programs or upcoming tips about how to keep your home cool in the summer or warm in the winter and that kind of thing. So if you do get your bill, I believe they do it in the paper bills as well, or if you get it online, you know, you can check out your bill online and follow the appropriate links, and they will tell you what to do as well.
Good to know. What about households that may have low income and they require some winter proofing upgrades, but that just might be out of their budget range?
Yes. And those are the ones that we look at who are going to, you know, who would also get like the free insulation, the free thermostats, the free water tanks, I believe, like just those free basic things. Now, if they need more help beyond the grant, there are other programs out there that can help. And what I would suggest you do in that case is call 211. Like, so if the grants are, you know, if you really need to make these changes for whatever reason, but, you know, just the grants aren't doing it for you, or you can't take out the loan because you're not sure how you're going to repay it, you can contact 211, and they can also put you in touch with other programs as well. Now, the other program that I'll just get into quickly before we get on here is it's a federal program, mm-hmm. and it's called the Canada Greener Homes Program. You can apply for that one as well. It works similarly, although the deadlines are slightly different. Now, what some low-income families can do is they can apply for both programs, but they cannot apply for the same fixes. So in other words, if you apply for the Ontario program, the Enbridge program that we just talked about here, And let's say you say, okay, well, I need to get a thermostat replaced. You cannot go to the federal program and apply for the same replacement, right? You have to apply for different things with different programs. Yeah. So they have two different energy advisors that come in. They have two different reports that are set up. They have very different deadlines. And I think the federal one seems to be more of a case by case one. So and that one, you can just go to Canada. You can just contact your local or sorry, your federal provincial representative's office, and they can send you more pamphlets and more information that applies to your area, because there are different stipulations that do apply to different provinces.
It's a really, as you've been saying, impressive. I do also like the way that there's kind of a catch-all. Like if you qualify for this, but not necessarily, there are other programs that you can look into. The support is there, is what I'm trying to say. That's important, because oftentimes you feel like you might fall through the cracks when you can't afford things like this. And plus, like, how many of us are even aware, right, until the problems start arising in our homes?
That's right. You don't know exactly why. It's one of the things that really indicate that you need help. And I mean, this happened to me one year. I didn't realize that I had so many gaps in my windows, let's say, because you can go up and you can say, okay, the windows are closed, but I don't feel gaps, you know? And then all of a sudden the bill went from, let's say, $200 a month for gas, and I'm just giving a figure, to maybe, you know, $500. And I'm going, okay, what's going on here? I'm not saying my bills would jump that rate, but if you find that you're having unexplained increases in your gas bill, except for the fact that the gas is going up, that might be to say, okay, now there's something I have to do here. There's something wrong. There's something I have to update here. There's something that needs to be changed here. And, they realize that, you know, people are having hard times. So, and again, they want to see climate change, right? So this is all going towards the federal and the climate change movement.
Margaret, how can we learn more about these programs? Is there a website we can go to?
Enbridge.com for the one program. And the other program I just learned about on a news program. And all I did was I typed in the Canada Greener Homes program, and it pulled all kinds of different websites and different things up on the screen, because it applies to different provinces. Or the best thing to do, and I tried this myself, is to contact your federal member of parliament, and they can even give you, because as I said to you before, there's too many different stipulations for different provinces, right? So in order to get the stipulations that you need, I would just go right to your federal member of parliament, and their assistants over there can direct you as to how to get what you need and how to set things up.
Amazing, Margaret. This is a really great resource and program. Thank you so much. And of course, we'll check in with you in a couple minutes, because we're going to talk Buzz articles as well.
Okay.
All right. Chat soon. Actually, it's a little more than a couple of minutes, because in a couple of minutes, we're talking about the Regina Folk Festival with Jim Crisco. It's a new pilot project that they're trying out. So we'll be back with that information on Kelly and Company. Welcome back to Kelly and Company. This is on AMI Audio. And if you want to check out content from AMI TV, lots of great on-demand stuff there. You can visit your Apple App Store as well as your Google Play Store on Android devices and download the AMI app that has all our programming available with closed captioning and described video for your interest and entertainment. There's so much good stuff coming out all the time on AMI TV. We usually get our previews on Mondays with our friends from the gang and reporters, like bureau reporters around Canada. But it is nice. It's nice to go on there and find some new content and updates to other content and postcards and things like that. Just lots. So check it out. The App Store on Apple products or the Google Play Store. We're available there with the AMI app. I'm Ramya Amuddin. Co-hosting with me this week is Danielle McLaughlin, and this is Kelly and Company.
Ramya, today for our regional content report, we're joined by Jim Crisco, AMI Content Development Specialist in Edmonton. Hello there, Jim.
Hello, Daniel and Ramya. I have to say, I was listening to the previous segment, and did Margaret actually talk about winterizing your home?
I'm know, sorry right? to say that she did. Yeah, I
too
know.
Too soon, too soon. I'm enjoying the 3 months of summer we get out here. So.
Gosh.
I know.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty hot here today, but she did point out that winterizing will also help with the hot months because you're keeping the outside. So, yeah, it wasn't quite so bad.
No, it's definitely the right thing to do. But it's kind of like when I'm going through the stores this time of year and I see the stuff out for school for kids,
yes.
All the school supplies. And as a kid, that used to crush me because it's like I still have half my summer left and I'm looking at school supplies. So that's kind of how I feel here.
Yeah, that's really
It's literally
distressing.
Like National Back to School Month. And I'm like, what? That should be illegal.
No, it's hard. In fact, seeing a box of crayons makes me feel like weeping in August. No, please no. Well, let's cheer ourselves up and hear about what's happening in Alberta with the Special Olympics.
Yes, indeed. February, I think it's February of 2023, the Special Olympics Alberta Winter Games is going to be hosted in Strathcona County. So Strathcona County It borders on the edge of Edmonton, so it's kind of it's Sherwood Park, and it's basically a suburb community of Edmonton, a city, and so it's very close to me here, and so in anticipation of the winter games, they hosted what they call a first annual Global Week of Inclusion as a kickoff for this, and bring you up to speed on that, the Global Week of Inclusion was created by the Special Olympics to bring attention to inclusive games, which is always a great thing. It should be front of mind. So they ended up having this celebration, this kickoff on the 23rd. And what they did was they created different events that some of the athletes could participate in. They had, I want to go through the list of organizations that they actually had involved in this because it's pretty vast, and it shows you that the expansion of inclusive sport. I mean, where it started from a few years ago, where they were really trying to at the point make everything inclusive. Now there's so much available to athletes, and they showcase programming from the Special Olympics, from Volt Hockey. The Robin Hood Association, which is a local association here, brought some of their sports. The Steadward Center, which is internationally known for para sports and supporting para athletes. Edmonton Adaptive Sports Association, Canadian Adaptive Show Sports, in this zone. Winder Inclusive Community Services, and of course the Strathcona Wilderness Center and Strathcona County Aquatics. So they got all these people together and they pulled out, really interesting gear. They had the Volt Hockey chairs there, which is, if you've ever seen them, is crazy. I just want to see a Battle of Alberta in Volt Hockey because it's so much fun to watch. And they got this, they used it as a kickoff. They had their ambassadors there and folks had fun and learned a little bit about inclusive sports.
Wow, that sounds like a really great way to spend some time.
Absolutely, I'm so looking forward to the games when they're here, because to me they're just some of the best sports to watch. The athletes are so committed to the sports, but yet out there having such a great time. So I love it.
Yeah, it gives you a really good feeling. Right? That's right. The spirit is all of what it's about for sure.
Absolutely.
So cool, Jim. We're going to move over to Saskatchewan, where the Regina Folk Festival is piloting an accessibility project using a hearing loop. So what's the project and what's the hearing loop and how does it all work?
That's a great question. I mean, because truthfully, I personally had not heard of this before this, but now that I've heard of it, It's amazing. What they're doing, so it's the Regina Folk Festival. It's just coming up, actually, in the next couple of days. They are piloting a project. What they do is they're installing what's called a hearing loop. And so I looked it up. I'm like, what's a hearing loop? What it does is it's kind of an antenna that will be hooked and gets the frequencies directly from the soundboard at something like a concert like this. And people with hearing aids or certain types of hearing aids or cochlear implants can or just even ear headsets can tune in to a frequency on the hearing loop, which basically gives you the clean sound off the board, which is so it eliminates almost all of the crowd noise and the voices around you to allow people to enjoy the music and the performers without hearing the distracting, and sometimes it can be overwhelming, crowd noise around you. So it sounds like just fantastic technology. It's used in a number of different ways. I mean, it can be used in, large public speaking events and that type of thing. But to use it for a concert, and there's also the added benefit too, of not only having this available for persons of who may be deaf or hard of hearing, but also for persons with autism, who can wear a headset to listen to it, and it tunes out some of the noise. They can actually adjust the volume to take it down if they are sensitive to loud noises. So it really is really cool technology. They're piloting it this year, and if it works well the way they think it will, they want to continue it into future years.
Well, this is really fascinating. And especially because the technology is being used in multiple ways. Like, it's not just, this particular example, but it's being used in all kinds of ways, which means the experimentation part of it is still out there as well to keep seeing how it can be used for better.
Absolutely. And when you think, when you look at it in the application of this, I'm not certain if the people who created this had anticipated using it in concerts or in those type of environments before. But the fact is, it's perfect for that environment.
And I bet they'll find even more uses for it as they continue with it. Because, sometimes something that's developed for use by people with disabilities, there are so many other uses. And people will say, why didn't we think of that before? I think that's a wonderful plan. Yeah, thank you. And finally, Manitoba will be introducing a transit policy that will try to make sure people with disabilities get a spot on the bus. Can you tell us something about that policy?
Sure. This is something that was voted on about a year ago, I believe, or at least in the last year in Winnipeg. And what it is they want to have priority seats at the front of the bus for people with disabilities. And there's always been kind of priority seating, but it's always been optional up to this point. And what they're going to do, and they're going to have basically an public education program that they're rolling out between now and October 5th. And then October 5th is when they'll kick in this actual legislation. But what they're doing is they're creating these priority seats so that when someone with a disability, whether it's visible or invisible, needs a seat on the bus, passengers who don't have a disability will be asked to move elsewhere. So they have an actual signal that the bus driver can turn on in the bus, which will verbally ask people to vacate the seats so someone with a disability can use them. Or the bus driver himself can get up and ask the person to move. And it's actually part of the transit policy now, and that the people will move. So It's great. It's been very well, very, very, very well received by the disability community, because they're saying we've kind of needed this for a long time. It's been kind of on the honor system before, but it's not to say that people wouldn't give up their seats, but if they don't know, they don't know. And if someone with a disability perhaps doesn't want to ask, they don't get the priority seating. And the priority seating is needed for a number of reasons, whether you have a mobility issue or whether you need to communicate with the bus driver to see what the next stop is going to be. You need to have those seats at the front.
Now, that's the one detractor really important. Well, I'm afraid we're nearly out of time, but this is really important because there are so many people who are reticent to give up their seats. And if they know that it's policy and that they're, that this is going to be happening, the education part is huge. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jim, and for telling us about these three wonderful things.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Our content development specialists join us Wednesdays and Fridays on Kelly & Company.
We have a whole another hour of Kelly & Company coming up. The International Association of Assistant Dog Partners is announcing a new website, and we're getting the details of that with Devin Wilkins. Plus, we're listening back to a conversation with Leanne Barda on picnics and barbecuing safety. She's our independent living skills specialist. Plus, after the break, we have the buzz with Bill, except not with Bill, with Margaret Weldon. We'll be right back.
Well, initially it was like, okay, I've lost my personality, my ego. That went on for a couple of years, and then eventually it's like, kick yourself in the backside and say, no more. You know, you have to look into yourself and say, what do you want to do? Go find out somewhere where you can do what you'd really like to do. There is an opportunity there.
Kelly & Company, sharing your stories.
When parts of the show from previous days kind of transition into content being covered in present days. Like yesterday, we were talking about hanging and installing doors with our woodworker, Jeff Thompson. And that was interesting because we got into that fireproof, that weathering, right, Danielle? Like it was, you know.
It was very, well, it was a little bit too close to home for us.
Well, for you, yes. Yeah, and she gets her Weldon on in the know and that kind of thing, weatherproofing our homes for winterizing our homes and things like that, which is, you know, just interesting. It's not planned. We don't do that kind of planning on Kelly & Company. We just book people in and then it just works itself out.
Here, and then we talked about August being back to school month. So, yeah.
Yes.
It's all, I know, it's a bit frightening.
It's all there.
Yes.
It's all there. So fun. All right. Well, Margaret is back to kick off the second hour of the show, which usually we have on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, Buzz with Bill Shackleton. But when Margaret's here, we call it the Buzz with Margaret. So thank you for coming on, Margaret, and for filling in for everybody, pretty much all our regulars this week. And what do you have for us?
I'm just sorry about the technical mix up this afternoon, but that's okay. Now, you guys are just talking about, you know, woodworking and how things go into one another, but I'm going to continue a little bit here and talk about a new innovative way to build houses.
Nice.
And this, yeah, what do you think of that? Jeff Thompson
we'll
might not
out.
Like it though, because it doesn't involve wood. That's the thing.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, what it is, a company in Kingston has come up with a way to build houses via 3D printer. And what it is, this printer apparently, this is kind of neat. Yeah, and it starts right from the ground up. And what it is this printer takes the diagrams or the pictures that the draftsmen or the architects draw up for a building. And then it produces the different shapes and the different mixtures of the concrete. So in other words, you know, if you have a certain design for the foundation, it will put together the foundation. And then if you have, you know, a different design for the first floor or whatever, it puts together that first floor and, you know, points out where the pipes and things are supposed to go. So in other words, all they would do is they would pick up these concrete pieces and basically put them together and seal it off with concrete and cement and all kinds of things so that there would be no wood involved. Now, Ian Arthur, who used to be an Ontario member of provincial parliament, has started this company. He says right now it seems like it is a little bit more expensive, but as time goes on, it will become cheaper because you're not taking trees down. You're fighting this again, this climate control. And when you use wood and things to build homes or to build structures, you're always dealing with these extra pieces or extra, you know, concrete that's left behind, and then you're having to discard that. Well, now this 3D method, you won't have to worry about that kind of thing anymore. So instead of part of your house being concrete, your whole house would be concrete. I don't know about windows and doors. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. It's sort of like a giant 3D puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I don't know if some of you out there would remember the Flintstones, right? It was almost like a cave thing from the Flintstones, like a rock house or something.
Well, yeah. Hey, and speaking of that, it's probably cool in the summer and warm in the winter, right?
It probably is. So, you know, we may not have to do any weatherproofing. I don't know.
No, okay. So we know that this is like legit, right? But how hard is this for you guys to get on board with, or at least feel that it is actuality? Like, does this sound very doable? I mean, there's so much stuff when it comes to building nowadays and putting things together, and even just moving of homes and giant buildings that happen everywhere, that it doesn't seem unplausible for me.
Well, they are showing them. They do have a demo model that's actually going up right now in Kingston, Ontario. The only thing I think that concerns me with, but the only thing that concerns me with this is that, you know, housing, we do have the housing crisis. So let's suppose if we went this way to build up an office building or something, could that building be converted into housing if we needed it to be? You know what I mean? Or like you say, you know, what happens if somebody says, no, I no longer want to live here or use here? You know, what happens to the building at that point? I guess, you know, it would go along the same lines as maybe our other buildings now.
I wonder if you can take it apart and bring it someplace else. You know, you build it out of blocks. You take sort of like, you know, when you were a kid and you built things with blocks and then you knocked it all down and started again. Maybe you can do that with this. Yeah, I like
it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what else do you have for us, Margaret?
Okay. So when you guys get donuts or whatever from Tim Hortons or any type of coffee place, how do you get them? Do you order them by app? Do you go pick them up? Let's start with you, Ramya. How do you do it? If you're going out to get donuts or coffee or whatever, what do?
I just go and pick them up. I've never fully gotten on board with the whole ordering ahead of time just to go pick it up anyways, unless there's something in it for me, like extra points or something.
That makes sense. Do you ever order Uber or anything like that, like to have them delivered to you? I know some people
to deliver.
Yeah.
Of course, for delivery, then, you know, less social and probably faster to just do it over the app if it's accessible. But in terms of ordering on an app to go pick it up in person, I've not done that. And that might partially have to do with like driving. Yeah. Danielle?
I've used the phone, you know, call an order. And then, you know, we have the old way. We have restaurants in our neighborhood. So you phone in the order and go and pick it up, or, you know, sometimes we've used some of
and that's for direct delivery, right? And
direct. Yeah, I send Julio. He goes and gets it.
that's the best way, isn't it?
Yes. And then there's the famous pizza phone number that everybody has memorized from all the ads, and just go there and, you know, phone them and tell them what you want. And they say, do you want the same order? And then you're embarrassed because they know how much pizza you like to eat. So, yeah. what else is there out there, Margaret?
Well, what it is that Tim Hortons, a lot of people customers have been using their app, whether it's to get them in, you know, to get the donuts ahead of time or to have them delivered or whatever. And a watchdog agency was reviewing the app and finding that this app was collecting all sorts of private information about people.
Yeah.
As a result, Tim Hortons, I don't know what kind of, they didn't say what kinds of information, but as a result, now Tim Hortons is facing a lot of multiple class action lawsuits. And so now Tim Hortons is coming back saying, I wonder what would happen. I wonder if we could really settle these people down with giving them a coffee and a baked good. So in other words, what they're calling the campaign is data for a donut. So if they've collected your private information, you'd get a coffee and a donut.
Whoopee.
Or be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that takes everything back.
Yeah. It's a little bit much, isn't it? You know, because they really, through those apps, they've been tracing people. They know where they are. Mm. They know where they're going, right, in some cases. And they have a lot of personal information. And for that, you get a coffee and a donut. How nice.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the courts haven't approved of this yet. They're actually planning on going to the courts with this proposal. I don't know. I don't know how I would react. Like, if I were the judge coming forward and saying, "What? Because you got there? Do you think a donut and a coffee is going to solve everything?" The courts apparently have said that the company must delete and prove that they've, you know, deleted this private information. And I don't know how, you know, who's following up to make sure that the information is being deleted or is not being misused or whatever. But anyways, that's Tim Hortons is the solution. And we'll stay on the food. We'll stay on food for a minute, because Fancy Feast, which is a cat food, is expanding into human cuisine.
Oh no!
And they're yeah. And this is no word of a lie. Human.
Oh, I really, you know, that tuna and liver flavored pate, I know that's cat food.
Yeah, I do too.
Some of it is hard to tell, though.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, dear.
Like, I don't know.
It reads deliciously.
Yeah, but it smells different, too. Like you can certainly smell the difference. Yeah, between canned, cat food, like canned tuna
before
for cats.
You open it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's
so,
right.
And Margaret, do they say why they're doing this?
Well, apparently, I don't know. They just thought they would try to do it, and they're actually calling it they're calling it gatto bianco. Is what they're calling it.
Oh, a white cake, is it? Yes, nice.
I guess, yeah. So it's like it's supposed to be an Italian type name, and they're having actually an event, a pop-up Italian restaurant for 2 days where people can reserve to go to this event, but they're only going to be able to serve their human cuisines to 16 people, but then they're going to put the recipes up on the website. So I don't know if people would want to be interested in eating human cuisine that's, originally started from a cat food. I don't think so. I think I would pass.
What do you think the next step is? Like food meant for both?
Share your dinner with your kitten. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like that's where it's going.
Maybe.
Margaret, really appreciate you joining us and helping fill in. You're going to be back tomorrow and Friday to keep filling in for the Buzz and Jeff Ryman. We'll talk to you then.
Okay, have a good afternoon, guys. Bye.
Thank you. And after the break, we're checking in with Devin Wilkins. She has our service animal and guide dog report. We'll be right back on Kelly and Company. Gosh, the conversations that have spun from today's Buzz with Bill articles. what was it called again? Gatto Bianco?
Yeah, Gatto Bianco, white cat. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Well, we're on to you. We think that there's going to be some human-friendly cat food so you can share your meal with your pet sometime soon.
No, thank you.
This is the prequel to that. Anyways, you can always check out all these conversations that we have on our repeat. 5 p.m. Eastern time is the repeat of today's show. If you want to check it out, AMI Audio. I'm Ramya Amadin here with Danielle McLaughlin on Kelly & Company.
Ramya, once a month, we're joined by our guide dog and service animal reporter, Devin Wilkins.
I'm Devin Wilkins from Peterborough, Ontario, your self-appointed messenger from the world of guide, hearing, and service dogs. Join me at this time each month as we discuss topics of particular interest to you and your precious pup.
Hello, Devin. How are you?
I'm doing well, Danielle. How about you, Ramya?
Doing We're great. Good. Thank you.
Thank you. I always look forward to your segments and hearing about what's happening in the world of the canines. The International Association of Assistance Dog Partners is announcing a new website, and we hear it's very timely. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, the IAADP, which is a United States-based organization, has been around for maybe 20, 25 years, and they've just announced the launch on August 1st of a new website, and everything is kind of all spruced up a bit and easier to find, I guess. And they serve people with all types of disabilities. And they do have some international members. Now, a lot of the stuff that you see on their website is American-based or kind of tipped toward the Americans because it is in the States is where it started. So, but there are other countries that have assistance dogs. I remember going with them to Japan, quite a few of them, to speak at an assistance dog conference over there. So they do have connections in other locations other than the States. So, yeah, IAADP.org. ORG. Now, the one thing that I wanted to mention, though, is that it has nothing to do with, at least it's not, it wasn't timed to coincide with International Assistance Dog Week, which is from August 7th to August 13th this year. It's always the first full week in August, but I guess the two things really have nothing to do with each other. But if you want to check out both websites, you'll get all sorts of information.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, this sounds good, and like you said, it's not really timed out, but still worked out.
Let's talk.
Devin, tell us about the second annual Leader Dog Walk that was took place in Canada, and it was a resounding success.
Yeah, it was. You know, you'd think that with only 2 years under its belt, not too many people would know about it, but there is a fellow here in Peterborough. His name is John Morris, and he is a member of the Alliance District. In fact, he is the chair of the Leader Dog Lions. They work to get people to go to Rochester Hills, Michigan, to go to their school. And they were around before the Lions Foundation of Canada here in Oakville. And there are a lot of people who like to stick with the school that they started with. So, yes, there are still some people that go from Canada down to Rochester Hills, Michigan, to go to the school there because they know the training program and they know the trainers and they're comfortable with the staff. So anyway, John decided that, and his committee decided that they were going to run a fundraising walk up here. To maybe raise a little bit of money for Leader Dogs. And last June, they had it. And the final figure that they came up with was $2,405, which is pretty good for, you know, just a city-wide walk and only happening in this district. So, yeah, they were very happy with how things turned out.
That's really nice. And yeah, and it's nice to cover, you know, the big events, but also the local support that, you know, these kind of things are getting. Because, of course, we know how much these all the events and all the support plays in the bigger picture, right?
Yeah, that's right. They've got to get their money from somewhere. And if they continue to serve Canadians, so why not, you know? And so it's nice that that Canadians kind of chip in and help to raise funds and not just assume that
that it's coming from somewhere. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And especially through the pandemic, honestly, all these monthly reports from you included, someone, somewhere, tons of people waiting on dogs, not being able to cross the border, struggling and dealing with the challenges of having to retire their dogs and not being able to work their dogs. There were just so many things going on. So it's almost like, you know, you have to work ahead and understand that these funds have to be accumulated, right? Because it takes a lot of work training these animals.
Oh, yes, and expense, you know, $30,000 a piece for the training that goes into these dogs and that sort of thing. Wow.
Well, no wonder it's a big celebration when people get a new one. That's, you know, big happy event for sure.
Oh, definitely. Wagging tails and everything else.
And that's just the person.
I know.
The August Spotlight on Assistance Dogs features Leader Dogs Prison Pup Program. Can you tell us what this is?
Well, I guess what they do is they when the pup is ready to leave its mum, instead of going to a family, they bring it into a prison institution facility, and the prisoners each take a dog and raise it for the next year or so and teach it basic obedience like sit and stand and down and wait and that sort of thing, commands like that. And I've heard prisoners say that it's a way that they can give back to society. And they feel just as bad when the pup is set to go to a blind person. They feel they're happy that the dog is going to be able to fulfill its planned goal, but you know, you can, it's so difficult to break that bond that you've managed to establish with the dog. And so they cry just as hard as any other family that does the foster work for the first maybe 15 months of the dog's life. Because it's hard to give up the dog, but they do, and the dogs have been very successful. You heard me mention John Morris earlier, and not his present dog, but the dog before that was from the prison pup program, and he has a presentation that was given on that program through Leader Dogs. And so I'm going to play that on Spotlight on Assistance Dogs on the third Friday of the month. But until then, in celebration of International Assistance Dog Week, my chat with the lady with the diabetes alert dog is still there. So you'll be able to enjoy both of those.
And the website that's really great.
Is there. So, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. And I bet that the dogs in the prisons benefit the prisoners, too, helping them to, you know, form bonds with, you know, another living yes. being is a big thing. That's wonderful to hear about.
I think forming bonds with people is one of the problems that they have had to deal with in their lives.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm sure that is very helpful to them.
Yeah, that's great. A great program. Devin, we have a couple of minutes. Can you give us a little bit of assistance dog trivia?
Okay. Do they train? And several schools across Canada do train. Do they train seizure alert dogs or seizure response dogs?
Oh, response?
Yes, that's right. Apparently alerting, some dogs can tell just, I don't know whether it's by your body language or I know for people with diabetes, it's the smell of your breath that mm-hmm. alerts them, the dog, to the fact that there's something wrong. But whatever it is, that is something that the dog has to develop on its own. And some dogs do, and some dogs don't. So it's not a seizure alert dogs that they train. It is response. A lot of people report having been robbed or otherwise abused while they're in the middle of having a seizure, if you can believe it or not. And so the dog is there to either bark for help or to just stand over the person and say, "Don't you bother my mom or my dad," while they're in distress already.
Well, that is really good to know. Very impressive behavior. Thank you so much, Devin.
You're welcome. Nice to chat with both of you, and happy International Assistance Dog Week.
And to you. We hear from Devin Wilkins on the first Wednesday of the month for our Guide Dog and Service Animal Report.
We're going to get some tips on barbecuing and picnics, a conversation from a while ago with Leanne Barta, after the break on Kelly & Company. We are back, the Wednesday edition of Kelly and Company. Thanks for tuning in live. And like I said, if you missed any of today's content, we had some really good tips. Margaret Weldon joining us a bunch and talking about great things that you can check out on the repeat at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. Okay, speaking of repeat, we're going to reach into the archives and listen back to a conversation we had with Leanne Barta. This is all the way back over a year ago from June 9th, 2021. We talked about picnic ideas and barbecue safety, some good outdoor stuff. So let's check it out. Leanne, we're very, very excited that hopefully and kind of now we can prep for upcoming summer gatherings and outdoor eating. Like one of my favorite things around this time of year is not just the summer foods, but it's being able to eat it outside.
Oh, no, totally. So now that restrictions are getting better and that numbers are going down, you know, we've been kind of living in limbo for the last 16 months. So it's time where we can finally start seeing more friends and family and do it safely. So, you know, thinking about all the really fun things we can do outdoors. So this brings a perfect time for our picnics and barbecues and all these really great activities that we can finally get to do.
Agreed. And Mary Mammoliti was talking a bit about this last week in this same slot. You guys are flip-flopping. So she was talking about how we have some really great ideas for picnics out there. But first, let's start with you on organizing the gathering these days, because there's several kind of factors and things to consider that might be a little bit of a tweak from how we used to do it, right?
Right, absolutely. So now you got to have to think about the size of the space, how many people are actually allowed to be in that space with you, if there's enough room to allow social distancing, if there's like bathroom facilities even that are right. actually to be unlocked. So I heard that all the water fountains are being turned back on finally after 2 years. So that's a good step in the right direction. And so some of the really great places you can go now are like different city parks, conservation areas. If you know people with good backyards, they're good places to start. So some things to consider too, though, but this, if you're considering doing a picnic pavilion with the city, you have to sort of reserve it in advance. And then if you need a barbecue permit, you have to get that as well. So you want to make sure you have all those kinds of things in place and also have a plan for inclement weather.
Okay, that's good. All right. And what about our plans that we should also think about with getting this event that we've got booked and ready to do it? What's our plan?
Right. So again, you know, consider who to invite and if the space is accessible for all those attending if they have additional needs. So you want to make sure that there are no barriers to participation so that everyone can enjoy it on an equal footing. You want to consider, you know, the kind of options. Is your meal going to be potluck? Are you everyone's going to bring their own? Or is everyone going to contribute to food that will be ordered in and or picked up that day?
So yeah, because a lot of people, Leanne, must be a bit nervous about potluck, especially with everything.
Yeah.
It's just the thing we're used to, like putting things out buffet style or, hey, so-and-so brought this. And, you know, as much as you may, but I know so-and-so sees about 153 people a day. It's, you know, like you start right. thinking things.
Yeah, exactly. So you can individually package things in Ziplocs or in smaller reusable containers right. so that everybody can have their own like individual chips and dip or veggies and dip or... You can now buy little individual cups of guacamole or little individual cups of hummus. So if you want to make sure you don't want to cross-contaminate, as they say, then there are options for that as well. Some nice. Other things you can consider, too, is like what kind of additional activities are you going to do during that day? So are you going to be doing any games and sports? Are the activities you've chosen accessible? I've seen all the rage now. I've seen like giant portable Jenga. Have you guys seen that?
Oh, yeah. Those are fun.
Oh, are they ever. They're a riot. Even yeah. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or giant Connect 4. And so all these can be accessible. Obviously, if a Jenga tower is the size of your body, you can feel where things are at. So.
Without collapsing the whole thing.
Right. So, you know, there's a way, a nice light touch, and away you go.
Right.
All right. So the next thing, yeah. So is how are people going to get their stuff to and from the spot?
Ooh,
so,
a big one.
Yeah. So can you use a wagon and a cane at the same time or one of those little rolly shopping carts? So kind of think about your options or can you recruit someone, you know, who is able to bring it there for you?
Yeah, see, and that's why, like, with bigger gatherings, you want to really consider not just vehicles and actual transportation getting to your spots, but how many people are there to help you cart the barbecue out or cart this out or that out? Like,
from,
and if you're cooking
even if
food,
you have a vehicle, from the vehicle or from,
I know,
you know, exactly. the transit.
Yeah
and yep, let's say you cooked food at home and you're bringing it there. Now you can't just, like, wobble your tray around. Like, this stuff has to be thought about.
Exactly. So my favorite is like this collapsible Costco wagon that I have. And
nice.
So when you're not using it, it clips up and folds into a corner. And then when you need it, you just uncollapse it, push the center down, and then you've got a heavy duty wagon to get your things where they need to go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. And then so another thing you could think about, are you going to play any music? So obviously there's no plug, so you want to consider like a Bluetooth speaker. This is the other thing too. Do you need extra ice packs? Ice? Can you borrow a cooler or a picnic basket from someone if you don't want to, you know, have your own because it clogs up your space? So always see if there's someone you can borrow it from.
Nice.
This is another good thing, especially when you have sight loss. So you want to determine what time of day you want to hold it and what the lighting conditions are and what's going to be most comfortable for people to navigate in.
Agreed.
Oh,
I'm a big
sure.
one of this. Yeah, like especially with outdoor picnics. Even if it's not necessarily going to rain, if it looks like cloudy on the forecast, I'm going to feel different. I know that because of my vision condition and how I'll feel in unfamiliar areas, especially if it's like a beach or a park versus someone's enclosed backyard and things like that, right?
Yeah.
It's noise level around you, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm like that with the sun, you know, and just I think a lot about sun and the ground. Is it uneven? Are you got walkways? Yes. Do you got to watch turning your ankle or whatever?
Exactly. And I know they have special cane tips for like off-roading, but, you know, you don't want to go to that extent.
You don't want to do it.
That's right. So plan ahead. This is a big one, you know, no matter what, is sort of creating a checklist of the items you want to bring with you and that your guests are going to bring. So then that way you make sure any shared items are going to show up that day and not everybody shows up with like a bag of chips and salsa.
Done that.
That's a bad thing. But yeah,
somebody's got to bring the chicken.
Right, exactly. So this is the other thing. You want to consider food that's going to stand up to being transported and will hold up well depending on the temperature. So food poisoning is no joke. So you want to opt for food that's easy to eat, requires little to no utensils, that isn't super messy. So things like fried chicken, burritos, cookies, you know, little cute little pinwheel sandwiches or you know, whatever's going to be the easiest and that's going to hold up and then may be okay with sitting out a little bit.
All right.
So if you want to get fancier, you can go with a charcuterie board with different meats and cheeses and olives and pickles and crackers or bruschetta, different kinds of dips, cut up vegetables so then and cheeses. So then when you get there, you can kind of have it already pre-cut before you leave, and then when you get there, you assemble it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a nice way of doing things. And then, of course, you know, what are you going to drink? So you got to figure out what's allowed in the location you're going to, if you're allowed to have alcohol or not.
Right.
Nowadays, there's all these really fancy, sparkling, fruit-flavored waters, so those are a really good option. And, of course, you know, like juice boxes, and then have everybody bring their own water bottle that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so this is a really cool thing that I learned about in my research this week. If you get those little, you know, the little tiny mason jars with the lids, you can fill them with the different kinds of condiments that you need so you don't have to bring a whole giant.
Bring everything. Yes, yes. And that makes sense. It's the smartest thing to do. And you know, just because you get so where, oh, I don't want to. And at the end of the day, you're full. Oh, I don't want to take this home. It's partially this or that. And you got it. You can't make a mess.
And it's the between of having like a little mini, those mini packages you get from fast food places versus a big, like the whole bottle from Costco, you know?
Well, exactly. So this is like a happy medium. Then you have these little tiny portable jars that has a screw on lid and then you can access them a whole lot easier. And then you don't, and if someone, you know, double dips or whatever, then you can just toss the small amount as opposed to wasting like a big container of it. So
I think the only thing I would worry about with them, and same with the wonderful thing of the charcuterie board, would be, oh, if I'm outside, what's flying around? But again, you have to have the give and take, right, with these things, and there has to be you can protect yourself to a certain degree, but if you're having a picnic or food outside regardless, you've got to be concerned. Right. Nothing stopping something, a fly from landing on the sandwich you just put down while you're having a conversation with someone.
Right. Well, I have seen there's like these little covers that you can put over your food. It's like a bug prevention kind of a thing.
Nice.
So when you're not eating something, you put the bug cover over and then you're all good.
Right. Okay, well, we're kind of getting into it already, but let's talk about properly packing the picnic.
Right. So when you're packing, you want to cover all of your food tightly. Whenever you're outside, you're going to run into bugs, so you don't want your food spilling out all over the cooler. So if it's in tightly sealed, reusable containers, it'll keep bugs out and food in. You want to make sure you include your flatware, your plates, your bowls. Or if you want simplicity, you can go for the disposable options. And even when you're in the disposable options, you can get like more eco-friendly versions now. Like I've seen bamboo plates and I've seen more, I guess, eco-friendly utensils. And you can even buy like wooden disposable utensils now, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
And then, of course, you'll need to cart all those reusable plates back out with you. So don't forget to bring a garbage bag, napkins, paper towels, and you know what? Baby wipes, they're good even throughout the lifespan, because sometimes, you know, something a little bit spills on your shirt, or
yep,
you get a glob of ketchup on your leg or whatever. So those baby wipes come in real handy.
I feel like you're just calling me out at this point.
Wow, I wouldn't do that. Perfect.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, you know, with hand sanitizer, if you want to bring extra hand sanitizer, and then make sure that everyone's hands are clean before you start. So I know you can even get those little camping water jug things, and then you can have a water and hand soap station set up if you want to go that far.
Okay.
And yeah, do we have enough time to go into something else, or?
Yeah, let's keep going with the basket, because I think packing the basket can sometimes be a project in itself.
Oh my goodness! It's like, you know, like yeah, how much can you get in this closet?
Exactly. Right. So you sort of want to pack your basket in the order that you need to take things out. So non-perishable foods on the bottom, and any plates and flatware on top of that, and then you can place the tablecloth or picnic blanket at the very top so that you can pull it out and put it on the ground first, or on the picnic table first. And then, of course, any fragile items can lay on top of the blanket so they don't get destroyed on your trek over there. Okay, you can also use like a Rubbermaid tote, kind of a bin to keep everything in, or a cardboard box to carry your items in.
Some of blanket baskets.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the wagon situation in this case. Then you want to do, for perishable foods, you want to put it in the cooler with the ice on the bottom and on the sides. And then if you're bringing foods that can spoil before they're ready to eat, like lunch meat, boiled eggs, fried chicken, make sure you keep, you pack it in ice, keep it chilled. And then it's less likely to go bad before you eat it. So you want to aim to fill your cooler about 25% with ice. Or if you have some really good ice packs to put on the bottom. I know they make like these longer, wider, brick style, ice packs now, so you can use those. I think my mom still has them from like the 70s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Longevity.
And then really quickly before we go, the items that we need to deal with the weather.
Right. So dealing with the weather, so you want to, if it's going to be chilly, you want to pack an extra jacket or a windbreaker, a scarf or an extra blanket in case. You want to make sure you have your hats, your sunglasses, your bug spray, your sunscreen, maybe even a large umbrella to protect you from the rain, and lots of water. Yep. And
lots
then you can even get these really portable, easy to set up pop-up tents or sun shelters.
Awesome. Leanne, really awesome. Got to let you go, but we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
All right. See you then.
Leanne Barta is our independent living skills specialist. And that was a conversation from June 9th of 2021. You could tell that we were very antsy to get out and have actual picnics and barbecues. And I've had a fair share of picnics and barbecues this summer. So definitely, you know, dealing with that craving. But going back to just one of the end points that she had, Danielle, about packing picnic baskets, I just never been a good packer. Suitcases, picnic baskets, backpacks, carts, like shopping carts, any of that stuff. It's a nightmare. How about you?
And all the soft stuff is at the bottom and gets squished, right? All the bananas are at the bottom.
Exactly.
And you think, why did I put the bananas at the bottom? No. Yeah, I know. No. But no, my sin is I put in way too much food. I think, okay, we've got four people here, but they might like this or they might like that. And, you know,
yes,
and therefore I have a picnic for eight just in case.
Right. And then does
and then we eat the whole damn
home?
Thing. Well, oh. No, we overeat as is our wont. But that's okay.
Exactly.
That's why you go on a picnic, right?
Well, no. It's true. But the trouble is when everybody thinks that way, so everybody overpacks.
Yes.
Which tends to happen in my friend's group as well.
Isn't that nice?
It's fun. It's certainly fun. But the walk home, let me tell you, this is why we pick far places to go picnic at, because at least we have the walk home to help digest.
To burn off a few of that. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, exactly. But it's really fun checking in with Leanne Barta. This is a really good convo. We wanted to revisit it because, of course, it's timely. summertime, and, you know, just genuinely hoping that people are having some outdoor eating time, because it's fun to do that. We're going to take a break, be back with a preview on what's coming up on tomorrow's edition of Kelly and Company. Also tomorrow's edition of Now with Dave Brown. We'll check in with that as well. This is Kelly and Company. Wrapping up Kelly and Company on a Wednesday afternoon, and I want to tell you about some AMI original podcasts that are releasing, have released. It's this week's release. But just to let you know that you can check out Kelly and Company on your favorite podcasting platform as well by searching for Kelly and Company wherever that is. And we have full show as well as segments in podcast format, so you can easily share with somebody else who may enjoy the content. So, podcasts include, other than Kelly and Company, AEBC's Triple Vision that was released yesterday, Tuesday. We have Into You with Fern Lullum and Low Vision Moments. These last two are published tomorrow, so look out for them. On Triple Vision, they're in part 5, actually, of this great series that they've been doing on the history of education for Canadians who are blind, deafblind, or partially sighted. It's very, very interesting. So if you're checking that out and following along, they're on part 5. Danielle McLaughlin and I have been holding down the fort this week. Danielle, would you like to feature a segment from today that people can check out on their podcast platforms?
I would. I really enjoy speaking with Devin Wilkins and talking about guide dog and service animals. She was telling us at the toward the end of her segment about dogs who are being trained in their early months in prisons, and the leader dog prison pup program. And, you know, it was quite charming, but also important to learn that, you know, people who are incarcerated are doing something that's so valuable for the community. And also a little sad to learn that the prisoners feel as sad as the foster families do when the dog is moved on to their new owner. And while they're very proud of being able to, you know, have helped to raise the dog, it's still a sad moment when the, you know, a puppy that you've raised goes off. So I really enjoyed listening to her talking about that. And she described it all very, very well.
Yeah. Plus we got to do some quick trivia at the end.
That's right.
Seizure response dogs and giving us some background on that. I think that was a very lovely way to end off the segment. Just so much information to follow along with Devin, and really appreciate that she reports to us with announcements and updates and even just features going on in the guide dog and service animal world. Better those than sometimes the news that people are not being, are not doing well within that world. So yeah, good stuff. Also, Margaret Weldon joined us for a lot of things in the know and health and the buzz. So many conversations there for you to check out. She featured a ton of great articles. Check it out all on the Kelly and Company podcast. Now let's find out what's coming up on tomorrow's edition of Now with Dave Brown, 9 a.m. Eastern time with your host, Dave Brown, on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Paul Daniel is one of the producers and he's here to give us a preview. Paul, what's on tomorrow's edition of the show?
Hello, Ramya. On tomorrow's show, Karen McGee, our content development specialist for Central Canada, will tell us about a disabled paddleboarder who has completed swimming across 4 of the 5 Great Lakes this summer. He plans to conquer Lake Ontario next. Dorothy McNaughton, our community reporter in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, will tell us about the upcoming 75th anniversary bash for the de Havilland Beaver Bushplane. And our film reviewer, Amy Amanti, will review the comedy drama series on Netflix titled Booby.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to the convo about swimming across the Great Lake, you know, I tried to find out if Danielle would do such a thing, and she said hard no.
Maybe suit the pilot a little bit, you know, make it worth a while.
Just not this year, Ramya.
Okay.
Give it some time maybe to prepare time. To rehearse.
Exactly. Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
All right. Well, Danielle, you're back tomorrow as well. So we'll chat with you then on the Thursday edition of the show.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Ramya.
Me too. Tomorrow we have Michael Fair with another audio entertainment highlight, The Prophecy. This is on Audible, but it is a collab with Q Code Media. So looking forward to that one. Also, Susan Kearney is talking about plants in our gardens to help with our pollinators. That and as well, community reporter Annette Dennis has tons of events going on during the summer in London, Ontario. So she's going to fill us in. Plus, we have The Buzz and our CNIB Smart Life segments and a roundtable hosted by moi. I'm looking forward to it. We'll catch you guys then at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Until then, have a good rest of your Wednesday.
This is Danielle McLaughlin, and I have the great privilege of co-hosting Kelly and Company with Ramya Amuthan today, and tomorrow. It's always so much fun to get to chat with Ramya about what's happening in the world and to follow up with all of our contributors. I spent a bit of time this morning in my garden, and I have discovered that there are a lot of black and yellow stripy insects out there. So I've been trying to figure out what sort of stripy insect is which. Some of them are quite benign. They're the big, fat, fuzzy bees, which go from flower to flower. Then there are some little tiny ones that are sweat bees. They're pretty harmless. And then there are the yellow jackets, who are known as the real jerks of the stripy animal variety. We're trying to figure out how we can dissuade them from visiting our garden. I've put out a few wasp traps. My next door neighbor has discovered that he's got a nest of them being built inside his porch. He's trying to figure out how to get rid of those guys. I told him the story that one time I decided I would get rid of a nest of wasps all by myself, went into a shrub with a pair of clippers, and ended up with very many stings all over. So he's taken my advice, and he's hiring somebody to do it for him. That way we'll all survive the summer. Anyway, I hope everybody is well in our listening area, and staying away from those black and yellow stripy things, whatever they are.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.